Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of December. This is our show that's part of the Faith Radio Network that covers the news and headlines of the day from a distinctly Christian perspective. You know, if you listen, we say it often, but we mean it every day, that we are part of a kingdom that knows no end, and we fix our eyes on Jesus together, who is the author and perfecter of our faith. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kastner, and I am broadcasting live today from somewhere in the Western Twin Cities area, unable to be in studio, so thankful for Neil Stavem for filling in for me all week during our share event. I've been unable to get in the car and travel much due to a back injury, but I'm a bit of a diva, and so I can wind my way through this entire week, but glad to be here, glad that they set me up remotely, and to be with all of you again this morning as we talk through so many of these headlines. And I know Carmen LaBurge is also on the line right now, who is our regular Friday guest for Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning, Peter.
Great to have you on the line as well, and I understand that we should probably say a thanks, and not probably, but really gratefully, say a thanks to all of our listeners over these last 3 days who listened to our winter share event and gave so generously again. I know that all the internal targets were exceeded, and momentum continues. We finished strong for the year, and as a listener-supported network, we just don't do a lot of this kind of thing. We don't do advertising, don't ask for money very often, but when we do, it is that time that we can't keep bringing ministry into the Midwest and streaming through our country without the listener support. So, Carmen, I don't know about you, but I know on behalf of Faith Radio Mornings, there's a big thank you to all of our listeners this morning.
Absolutely. This is a ministry we do in partnership with everyone who's listening. And so if you're listening live on terrestrial radio and the Faith Radio Network, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you're listening streaming online at myfaithradio.com, thank you, thank you, thank you. Or if you're listening via the Faith Radio app on one of your connected devices, thank you as well. And if you're saying to yourself, oh, I missed the opportunity. No. You didn't miss the opportunity. You can give any day at myfaithradio.com and support the ministry that we are participating in alongside you and seeking to, well, in the case of connecting faith, we're really trying to reconnect the eternal with the everyday. And here on Faith Radio Mornings, really seeking to start your day not only with the Word of God, but in fellowship with the people of God, bringing the mind of Christ to bear on the headlines.
Man, you say that even better than I can, Carmen. But that's why you're big time. That's why you do, to have you on the program like this, to just bring at least some measure of levity and wisdom and Christian character every week. I mean, you really end our week well, Carmen.
Well, thank you. Everyone is now rolling their eyes and hoping that you and I are going to get to some kind of headline here.
I would think that's a good idea. Why don't we take a short break here? I know that we can talk a little bit about the Miss Universe contest that was just out, where all the judges were women, but all the contestants were not. We'll talk about something always exciting to me, Voyager 2 reaching interstellar space. And, of course, some of the headlines from this week, including Michael Cohen, the former fixer for President Trump, has been sentenced. And we'll talk more about him next on Faith Radio Mornings. Back to Faith Radio Mornings for this 14th of December. We're on the line with our good friend, Carmen LaBurge, who is the host of Connecting Faith, the midday program that airs every day here on the Faith Radio Network, Connecting Faith to Life. And she joins us on Fridays to help me talk through so many of the different headlines of the day and do just that, connect them to our lives as we're kind of doing our friendships and our relationships, our church lives together. And Carmen, I know that this Robert Mueller investigation seems to have been going on since I was a child at this point, and maybe it's getting closer to wrapping up, and we see a sentence being levied to Michael Cohen, who was the former lawyer and fixer of some of the behind-the-scenes problems our president certainly seemed to be having, especially in the illicit affairs that he had, and he was sentenced this week and seems to have turned his back quite a bit on the president. And there's been a lot of response, criticism from either side. What is your take on what's been happening with Michael Cohen?
So I hope that first and foremost, as Christians, we are praying the news in terms of this story. If you've seen any of the pictures or any of the video related to the day of his sentencing, you know, Michael Cohen does not walk into that courtroom all by himself. Referenced in most news pieces are his, you know, 80-plus-year-old dad who's in a wheelchair, for whom this is a literally disorienting experience. His wife, children, this is not just about one individual. And I think that each and every one of us should take that into account every time we make a decision that we actually know is morally wrong. And I would say that some of the things that I would highlight from Michael Cohen's own statement, and then some of the things that I would highlight from the judge, are really easy stepping off points for conversation for Christians today. Michael Cohen notes that his weakness, what he views as his weakness, was his blind loyalty to an individual, and that that caused him to choose a path of darkness. Well, Peter, I mean, that's just a setup right there for a conversation with somebody about the choices that they're making, who in life they're following, which in Scripture would be, you know, an idol other than God. And the path, in the language in Scripture that is path language, is the language of the way. And we know that Jesus Christ is the way and the truth and the life. He's also the light of man who comes at this time of year. That's part of what we celebrate at Christmas, is that the light breaks into the darkness. The darkness doesn't understand it, but neither will the darkness overcome it. Like, there is an opportunity to use what Michael Cohen is saying and this experience that he's having in front of a judge, receiving judgment. Those are good conversations to talk with about people, about, you know, there is a judge, he is on a judgment seat, and Jesus Christ, who comes this, who already came, whose Advent, first Advent we celebrate, is coming again. And when he comes again, he's not coming as a baby in a manger. He is coming as the judge. And so I think that if we allow ourselves to take what culture is offering us and really till the soil of it, we have really profound opportunities to get God back into this particular conversation. I got a couple more things to say on this story if you want me to just continue.
Yeah, I would say roll with it. I think it's so interesting to just, in terms of, he's really reaping what he's sown on a number of levels, and that's true of all of us. We can get away with things for quite some time, but at the end of the day, even if it is at that judgment day you referenced, there is going to be a reaping of what's been sown.
Right, and so when Michael Cohen is standing in front of this judge in this courtroom, knowing he is going to be sentenced, the judge is the one who actually makes this observation about having a sense that somewhere along the way, Mr. Cohen appears to have lost his moral compass. And so I do think we can talk with one another about to whom, not to what, but to whom is our moral compass calibrated. And if your moral compass is calibrated to somebody who is really seeking to advance their own name and build their own kingdom, then you are going to end up on the path of darkness. Now, in Scripture, we call that the path of destruction. And it's going to lead away from light and life and truth and goodness and beauty. If, however, your moral compass is calibrated to Jesus Christ, he is literally never going to lead you astray. Never. It is never going to happen. He is always going to lead you in goodness, beauty, truth, light, love, joy, peace. I mean, just think of the litany that you could roll out to people, sharing with them the very peace of Christ on this particular subject. And then finally, Peter, I think that I would like to point out, in terms of Michael Cohen's own comments about this experience, he actually told the judge that he had been in a form of personal and mental incarceration since the day he started working for this particular individual. And he said, today, I'm getting my freedom back. He is standing in a courtroom where he knows he's going to be sentenced to actual physical prison. But for him, the opportunity to tell the truth was actually good. What I would, you know, from a Christian perspective, I would say he's recognizing that it's good for his soul. It may not be good for anything else in the world, but it sounds as if this is a man who feels genuinely liberated from a bondage that he perceives himself to have been in. And so I think there are lots of layers of opportunity for conversation here that do not require maligning either individual involved in this story. That does not, none of this conversation requires maligning the president nor maligning Michael Cohen. It does require that we use what the culture is giving us in this conversation to actually talk with ourselves, right, in the mirror about our own moral compass and who we're really, like, legit following. But to talk with others who we love, particularly our kids, right, about the moral compass to which, you know, what is their true north? To whom have they actually calibrated their moral compass?
Yeah, it's beautifully said, Carmen. And I think just before we go to break, you referenced this idea that even though he's walking into four walls of a prison, for him, he's feeling freedom from this place of what felt to him to be oppressive power. And I think it's another conversation we can have with people is that the power, whatever we're subject to, the powers of this earth, whether it's a governmental power or an employer power, or whatever it happens to be, those really are, at the end of the day, temporary. There is freedom from those moments.
Absolutely. And so the final parallel, I think, you're going to hear a lot of parallels to this story and stories related to, you know, what happened in the 60s and Watergate. Well, the individual in the Watergate story that I would liken in some ways to Michael Cohen at this point would be Chuck Colson. And this little interim period that we're now in between the sentencing and the actual date when Michael Cohen is to show up for, you know, to go to prison on March the 6th, this in the life of Chuck Colson, this was the window of opportunity that Christians who were his friends drove to his house and talked with him about Jesus Christ and the gospel. And so I'm really praying that during this window of opportunity, there are Christians who are in relationship with Michael Cohen and his family who actually take this opportunity to advance the gospel in the lives of this particular family.
That's the voice of Carmen LeBurge. You know her from Connecting Faith each day here on the Faith Radio Network. We're going to take a short break. Come back, Carmen. I would love to get your take on the fact that Voyager 2 is heading out of our solar system, reaching interstellar space and the implications of that, as well as the fact that in the Miss Universe pageant this year, not all the judges were women, but all the contestants were not. So more with Carmen LeBurge of Connecting Faith next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 14th of December. We're chatting with Carmen LeBurge of Connecting Faith, who joins us each Friday morning to talk through so many of the different headlines of the day from a Christian perspective. And Carmen, I see that on the 16th of December, we're going to be anticipating the Miss Universe pageant, and this time all the judges are women, but all the contestants are not. Where are we right now in all this gender bending and blurring that's going on in our country?
So I'm going to make a bold prediction. I'm going to make a bold prediction that this may be the very last Miss Universe pageant. I don't know how you can keep calling something a Miss anything if you miss the point that it was designed to be some sort of beauty contest among biological females. And once you have reached the point in sort of global cultural delusion that people who declare themselves to not be the gender of the body in which they were born, can then have radical surgery, like from literally nose to knees, and that they can be surgically enhanced in such a way that they look more beautifully female than naturally biologically female people, and then you're going to allow that, you know, that really that surgically enhanced person. Who really is, at this point, the creation of plastic surgeons. You're going to allow that person to compete against, you know, women who are women. And once you've reached that stage, in my view, you know, I don't know a lot of men who are going to want to watch and, you know, let's admit, Peter, part of this is sexual enticement, be not knowingly sexually enticed by a person who, for all the world, now looks like a woman, but for all of reality, really is not. And I think that once we've reached this point, we certainly have reached a point where deception has got to be a huge part of our conversation about beauty. Deception has to be a huge part of our conversation about what in our culture and globally at this point, you know, people are willing to believe.
Well, it's going to be, and I think your prediction is going to come to bear, just for the simple fact of this is all about ratings and money at the end of the day, and I have a hard time believing that this idea is sustainable on any level in our culture.
Right. So I think that, like, in 2012, there was a Canadian transgender model who filed a lawsuit because the Miss Universe pageant at that point barred transgender people from participating. So I think that once the, you know, once the door was open to non-biologically female people participating, then the surgical enhancement community really got busy making sure that they had, you know, they had a candidate who could theoretically win. And see, this is where now I am challenged to know exactly how to refer to this individual, the contestant from Spain. Maybe that is how we should refer to this individual. This contestant from Spain, you know, is physically quite beautiful. And is, you know, in terms of the way people people bet on this in the same way that they bet on horses or in the same way that they bet on football teams. And so in early betting, she actually was an early favorite to win.
It's just, I mean, it's mind-bending, Carmen. I don't know what to do with it completely. And I know it was probably about 6 months ago I read a very left-leaning liberal and actually lesbian scholar on the East Coast of the United States, and she was writing that when a culture begins to blur the lines in the way that it does, and she was looking back through history in the Roman Empire and the Grecian Empire, some times out of Germany, some other events in history, that it's not a sign of sophistication and complexity and that we're becoming more enlightened. It's often a sign in which a culture and a country is no longer believing in itself. It doesn't have any kind of anchoring. It doesn't know how to process any kind of life together.
I think that it's she's absolutely right, and what we're talking about is not just individual disintegration, the inability to approach life as an integrated reality, but we are looking at the sort of cooperative or collective disintegration, not only here in the United States of America and really not only in the West. You know, let me remind you, this is the Miss Universe pageant, and it's taking place in Bangkok, Thailand. And so every contestant involved, every nation involved, has to concede that this person is a woman, and they have to concede that they will refer to this individual with all female pronouns, and they will refer to this individual as Miss Universe if she wins. They're already referring to her as the, you know, the contestant for the Miss Universe pageant from Spain. So it'd be interesting to be in the conversations with young people about, you know, particularly those who have an interest in the kinds of things where biological men are now competing against biological women in sports and now in pageants. It'd be interesting to be in those conversations about whether or not that's a disincentive for young women to be engaged in these things at all, which sets up, I think, Peter, probably the most interesting conversation that we're going to see going forward on this front, and that is between those who are, like, genuine feminists and genuine advocates of the transgender revolution.
Well, and certainly there is quite a bit of disconnect now between advocates for the same gender relationship community and for the transgender community, because there's a lot of question marks. I know I'm dealing with them in my class on sexuality right now, in which if somebody transitions, are they now in a homosexual relationship? Are they in a heterosexual relationship? If two people that were lesbian and got married and one changes into a man, what is that? They can't define the relationship, and it's causing quite a bit of dissonance internally in the GLBT movement.
So defining the relationship would be the probably the part of that that I would focus in on. If my relationship with God is ill-defined, I can honestly not understand who I really am. And that taints every other relationship that I have. And so I really can't well define or define rightly define my relationships with anyone else unless I rightly understand who I am in a restored relationship to God. And so if we really stop and think about that for a moment, it explains why we have so many broken relationships. And it explains why so many people have broken relationships with themselves. And so, you know, this sort of gets back to the conversation about evangelism and the need for us to share the good news of the gospel. And this time of year is a really actually easy time to do that. We actually are the people who know that Jesus Christ is the good news. He manifests, he embodies the good news of great joy for all people. That God was willing to take on human flesh in order that he could go to the cross and do for us what we could not do for ourselves in order that we could have a restored relationship with him forevermore, right now and forevermore. And in that, we discover or rediscover who we are, to whom we belong, and what in the world we're in the world to do.
Yeah, it's beautifully said. At the end of the day, we are all children of God. That is our central identity, and to try to make an identity out of anything else is always going to be confusing and shifting. That is the voice of Carmen LaBerge. Carmen, we have a couple minutes left, and I'm curious, there's another headline out that Voyager 2 is beginning to leave our solar system. It's reaching interstellar space. If you could be a passenger on that, and it's a one-way trip, but you get to explore the universe for the next 40 or 50 years or so, would you have jumped on Voyager 2?
Okay, so my parents would have had to have made that decision. This thing launched in 1977, so I think that part of what I would lift up to people is the extraordinary commitment to time that is made in this experiment. So this was launched in 1977, and it has just now reached, it's traveling at 290 million miles a year, more than 34,000 miles every hour. That's just extraordinary. And so when we talk about like the capacity of scientists to do really cool stuff, it's awesome. The thing has left the solar system. It has entered, I think, what they describe as the hypothetical Oort cloud of objects that's still influenced by sun's gravity. I'm actually reading that because, you know, I have no idea.
That's off the top of your mind, Carmen. I know how you
roll. It's possible, right? So this is where the mystery of where it is. So it's possible that it's not going to actually reach, the word here is hypothetical. It's possible it's not going to reach the hypothetical Oort cloud of objects still influenced by the sun's gravity for another 300 years. And it's going to take 30,000 years for it to fly through that hypothetical cloud. Now, first of all, that we have hypothesized that there is this band of objects out there that's so far away that we don't really know, but we sort of imagine it, and that it's going to take 30,000 years to get through it. I think that, you know, obviously there are scientists who are believing in sort of the infinite scope, not just of time, but of space. And it gives us an opportunity to talk about I think who God is. It gives us an opportunity to talk about time. It gives us an opportunity to talk about all of that that is beyond us in both time and space. And that God actually, you know, again, to come back to the Christmas story, enters time and space at a particular time in human history. And although it was a long time ago, it still really matters.
Well, what I love about this, Carmen, as we wrap this up, is the idea that heaven is not going to be some just barge of gold floating just beyond Mars somewhere where we dwell forever, but the idea that God may invite us, and many theologians say this sort of thing, to sort of just explore the expanse of his infinite universe and the beauty and the wonder that he is. So thanks so much for joining us this morning. As you do, Carmen, what do you have coming up on Connecting Faith today?
Today we're going to talk with Becky Kaiser about sacred holidays, and maybe we're going to also talk about how all the stars for all eternity have been bowing down in worship to the living God.
I love it. Thanks, Carmen, for joining us and just talking through so many of these headlines. We'll take a break here for bottom of the hour news and lighten up, and when we come back, we'll be joined in the second half of this hour by Dr. Gary Stratton, and Gary and I are going to talk about the idea of redeeming our genealogical tree. So as we're celebrating during this Christmas season, and well, we should just take a little extra caution on this. It says a new study is that Christmas is the greatest time of year for a heart attack. The study says a person's risk for a heart attack spikes during the holidays and peaks around 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve. The researchers in Sweden who conducted the study found that risk is shooting up by 37% at that time. So I know it's a very stressful time this time of year. Take a little extra care to maybe get away, take a walk, spend some time in the scriptures, and just keep everything dialed down so that we can really celebrate this time of year in the way it's meant to be celebrated.
We're not made to live in caves. We're supposed to embrace the mountaintop. This is Jim Garlow. When the Israelites turned from God and fell into national sin, Judges 6 tells us that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Things got so bad, the Israelites resorted to living in caves so they could hide. And it was all because of sin, which caused Adam and Eve to hide from God, and often does the same to us. Have you ever found yourself so overwhelmed by circumstances or by shame, you go into hiding? My friend, you were not made for cave dwelling. You're made for the mountaintop. So the first step towards victory is repentance. Confess your sin and return to God. Then let your light shine before all. We desperately need to do that as a nation and just as much as individuals. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Love that music. That is our favorite walk-up music of the week. It also means that University Professor of Spiritual Formation and Cultural Leadership, Dr. Gary Stratton, he works at Johnson University, joins us to talk about so many different dimensions of our Christian faith as we keep walking this out day by day. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, Peter.
How are you? It's Christmas time. I mean, I know this is an enjoyable time of the year for you, and with Advent and everything, things progressing well into Christmas season for you?
Well, I haven't even started thinking about Christmas yet, except for my Advent reading and stuff. So,
I love it. Well, you know, Gary, one of the things you and I were talking about relative to this time at Christmas, to the birth of the King and coming right out of the Gospel of Matthew, is Matthew starts, interestingly enough, with this genealogy. And the reason why Matthew starts that way is his readers that he was writing to were primarily Jewish, and he wanted to show them and demonstrate that the Messiah really did come through the proper lineage, through the proper tree that was anticipated through the prophetic readings in which the Messiah was going to come. But boy, when we look at that family tree, Gary, and I think for many of us that have, if we look back through our genealogies, there might be people and situations and events that we'd rather keep hidden rather than brought into the light. And you look at Jesus' family tree, it's filled with quite a few people that, let's just say, were less than Christian in their character.
It is, and it's very. I think it's very deliberate. It's with the part of Advent we always skip. We never read the genealogies, and yet that's how the New Testament starts, with this amazing, rich history brought to us, synchronology of life since Abraham.
And as far as that goes with some of the people here, we see somebody like a Ruth is in the family tree, and she came out of the incestuous daughters of Lot and really experienced this profound redemptive story in that. We see Judah and Tamar, where there was not a lot of redemption in that particular story, David and Bathsheba. And Gary, I was with my students this last week, and we were just talking a little bit about family background and what it means to maybe honor your father and your mother and some of your past. And are there things that we should really pay attention to, not ignoring our past family trees and maybe what has been there, but what is the invitation to set out a different pathway moving forward in all of this?
I think it's an invitation to be human, to be fully human.
I think we're having some technical difficulties with Gary on Skype right now. I might try to get him on his cell phone. But Gary Stratton, a University Professor of Spiritual Formation and Cultural Leadership at Johnson University, joining us. And we're talking a bit about what it means to redeem the family tree and to think about life moving forward. And Gary, again, when it comes to the background of Jesus, he didn't exactly come through this royal lineage of kings and queens and wasn't the son of affluence or anything along those lines. He came through common people that were just walking out life, and that is instructive for us in terms of we don't have to have a lot of nobility in our family tree. We don't have to have a lot of perfection in our family tree in order for God to continue to do his redemptive work in this world.
Hey, Peter. This is producer Rachel, and we're just going to switch over to Cell with Gary. So just hold tight for one moment.
I think that sounds like a great plan, Rachel. We can monologue and fill in. And I know if you're listening this morning, it's one of those things. I was chatting with my students this week, and we were talking specifically about divorce in my sexuality class. And a good half of my students would be coming from families in which there was a significant divorce, maybe in their parents or with aunts and uncles and beyond. And it's part of the marks of what's happening in our country over these last 40 or 50 years. And we talked a lot about the fact that they can help even just honor some of their family tree by charting a different pathway forward, by for generations to come, they can stand in the gap of some of the brokenness of the past, because we're all frail and we are all human and we all make mistakes, and divorce is divorce is not the irredeemable sin by any stretch. And part of what we can do as children of divorce is to create a different environment moving forward. And that honors our mother and father's grandkids and great-grandkids and grandkids beyond that. So it's a profound invitation, but a difficult one. It sounds like we have Gary back on the line at this point. Gary, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Well, we can hear you a little bit better for some reason. You know, surprisingly, Gary, fiber optics and interconnectedness across the country, sometimes there's hiccups in this technological process.
I know. Well, it's just, I guess that's first world problems, but I'm back, and I love what you're saying here about this reality of part of being fully human, part of Jesus being willing to enter into the life with us, is entered into a sinful world. Now, he had no sin nature, but man, Matthew just sticks it right in your face. You've got Tamar, who was got this faked prostitution piece in her story, and Ruth, who's got very bad lineage, basically is David's grandmother, is breaking the rule of not intermarrying with the people of the land, and then of course you can't get away from David's wife, that the royal line comes through, that it is Bathsheba, who, there's some pretty nasty story behind that of adultery and murder, and yet through that tangled web of humanity comes this beautiful Messiah.
Yeah, it's phenomenal to see some of the background in that, Gary. We're going to take a short break. I want to dive into these stories a little bit more, too, in terms of what we can learn as people of faith and the brokenness around us and how we understand our life and this redemptive God, what it means that God not just redeems us, but redeems the future that might be birthed through us. So more with Gary Stratton next on Faith Radio Mornings. Love that Christmas music, Gary. We're talking with Dr. Gary Stratton, our great friend here at the program on Faith Radio Mornings, who joins us each Friday to talk about so many different dimensions of our Christian journey. And Gary, I think we've resolved the technology problems. You're on that very old school technology called the cell phone. I know for me, an old school technology is a phone on the wall, but for my kids these days that I'm teaching, the cell phone, kind of, you know, take it or leave it. They're connected almost just virtually all day long.
Yeah, they don't even know what a hardwired phone is.
So true. So we heard some Christmas music there, and we had started our segment. I was just wondering how you mentioned that you didn't even really think much about Christmas here recently. You've been doing your Advent readings, but tell us about how you're preparing for Christmas.
Well, I normally try to, both do some things corporately. Soon I found a deep commitment to the arts at the Christmas season is so meaningful. We just went and watched the University of Tennessee's performance of A Christmas Carol at Clarence Brown Theater earlier this week. And the week before that, we had a breathtaking Lessons and Carols service, which is actually based on the annual service that has gone on for 100 years at Cambridge. But we had the world champion dulcimer player as part of the service, and our mouths were just open in awe at the sounds he was able to make come out of this beautiful hammer-struck dulcimer. And it just, the arts brings you into touch with the real meaning of the Christmas story in a way that virtually nothing else can do.
Yeah, it's really true. It does draw us into just sort of the mystery and the wonder of the season. And part of that wonder, I think, Gary, and it's what you and I have been chatting about a little bit this morning, is the idea that God continues to redeem and continues to work on behalf of the future, regardless of the present and the past. And it doesn't mean we can wipe away our past, but we can be active agents in God's renewal of the future. And part of that is recognizing that sometimes within our family trees, and regardless if there's a lot of brokenness or not, all kids have to think through, what did my parents leave me that I want to take with, and what are some things that maybe could be redeemed? I know Hallie and I have those kind of conversations often with our kids, that we are broken and frail individuals, and it doesn't matter how many fancy letters we have after our names, there's going to be things that we're passing down that are less than satisfactory relative to kingdom life, and what can they do moving forward? And it's part of the invitation for all of us, isn't it?
No, I think it is. I think, you know, Arrhenius said that the glory of God is human beings fully alive, but part of that fully alive, at least in this present evil age, is our brokenness. And the sometimes we get into this Christianity that's about deny about our brokenness instead of embracing it and taking responsibility for it, teaching our children to ask for forgiveness for their failures by asking forgiveness of our children for our failures. Wow, that is hard, and yet that's where some of the greatest lessons take place as a parent.
And it's some of those places where freedom really comes in, doesn't it, Gary? When we're able to do that kind of work, we're not denying that things are difficult. We're not denying that we're bringing things into the environment for our kids that are going to be painful and hurtful. And when we don't deny it and move into some of these places of asking for forgiveness, there really can be authentic freedom relative to the future.
No, you set a whole new legacy in place for your kids when you live a gospel life, a life that's focused about it sounds so silly and basic, but just a love that's a life that's measured by the vocation of loving God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and loving our neighbors as ourself, and loving our brothers and sisters in Christ as Christ loved us. I mean, these are high bars, and yet we're running around trying to find God's will for my life. And he's like, here it is. Love the people around you.
And in terms of with our families and our backgrounds and those sorts of things, if somebody is in some very understandable pain and maybe they've never had parents or grandparents or somebody who brought some of the wounding in, come to them and ask for forgiveness or anything along those lines, what are some first steps for somebody who has a very troubled family tree to be able to say, okay, I need to start working on behalf of the future in my own life right now and not carry these things forward? What are some initial steps in that redemptive process?
Well, I think the first step is to get – I don't think we can get through these things alone. We need some kind of mentor, spiritual director, counselor, someone that can help us kick open the hood of our lives and begin to say, oh, I see what's wrong here. This carburetor's dirty, and just be able to help us understand what's going on in our life, because we just live our life stimulus response. We go, why did I do that? Why did I respond that way to my son or daughter? Why did I yell? Why am I feeling so embarrassed because they didn't make the baseball team? Or those are the kind of things that need to be worked through, and the light of Christ needs to be invited into them, even though that can be incredibly painful.
And as that light kind of shines, and I know that's one of the first steps in all of these things, right, is just being honest with the reality and not trying to deny what's happened in the past, maybe in your genealogy. But as we start working into some of those things, this is where so much of the work that you do in the formation world begins to take shape, right? It becomes a daily journey. I think we want it to be a one-time event where everything's fixed, but I don't know many people who feel like their life is fixed in one day. It becomes this rigorous daily journey in which we engage.
No, it doesn't. You know, the disadvantage of not living in an agricultural society any longer is that the idea of cultivating something over a long period of time, that work done burying your best seed in the ground in the mud, when your farmer's done, all they have is this beautiful field of mud. I mean, nothing else. And yet that's some of the deepest work that needs to be done. And my students are always, you know, what's the quick fix? What's the one prayer I need to pray, one formula I need to follow, the one experience I need to have from on high that'll just set me right forever? And I said, well, I don't know what it is, but I haven't found it in 5 decades. So I think this long process, what Eugene Peterson calls a long obedience in the same direction.
Talking with Gary Stratton this morning, University Professor of Spiritual Formation and Cultural Leadership at Johnson University. And Gary, relative to that long obedience as well, Carmen LeBurge and I, in the first segment today, were talking a bit about this idea of we end up reaping what we sow on so many different levels. And Michael Cohen, the former lawyer and fixer for President Trump, who really felt that it was his duty to clean up all these messes in some pretty unethical and immoral kinds of ways, and he's reaping a bit what he has sown, and so is the president in those situations. So much of our lives, I think, Gary, I think I've got to do the right thing right now, but the invitation in the kingdom is what is the fruit that's going to be born from the work today. And I think when we're taking that long walk of obedience in the same direction, we don't always think this is beautiful and wonderful, but we don't always see what impact that quiet obedience is going to have well into the future.
No, that's so true. I mean, learning to live life in the moment with no regrets, not what do I feel like doing right now, what is the most convenient or most conflict free or easiest thing to do now, what is that going to mean 5 years from now, 10 years now, 15 years now, from now, if I keep doing it. It's one of the major things Sue and I deal with in premarital counseling with students, that you need to make a big down payment in that marriage to make the right decisions, to talk things through in the right ways early on, so it simply becomes a habit. And that habit bears tremendous fruit long term. If you bit your tongue enough times to not let those natural words to come out of your nuclear family flow into your new family, your new marriage that you're expecting, that eventually they get cut off and a new spring of life starts to grow up within that life, family, marriage.
And that's really so much just being aware of our past. And as you said, it's those simple actions, it's those simple words. I'm amazed, Gary, always at what I think are some things that maybe were throwaway comments with my kids that they remember and they remember and they remember. And we got about 30 seconds left. That's really being mindful in the moment of how it's going to play itself out is really an important way of redeeming the future.
No, it is. And just in setting those little bars of remembrance, of devotions in a family, of Christmas traditions that are kept. These are things that work their way deep into our psyche and begin to shape our very identity. And we're doing that with our kids every day.
That's the voice of Dr. Gary Stratton joining us each Friday. Gary, thanks as always for joining us in Faith Radio Mornings, bringing the wisdom of the day into our lives as we continue to follow Jesus in this world. We'll take a break here and wrap up our show for the day here, or at least the first hour of our show, I should say, on the 14th of December. Always a great first hour of the show on Fridays with Carmela Burge and Gary Stratton. Looking forward to hour two here on Faith Radio Mornings, in which Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com will join us, and we'll talk a little bit about the movie Mortal Engines being released today, as well as a blog that came out wondering if the VeggieTales shows were actually racist.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.